Hi, I'm Bali.
And welcome to the Dietitian Frequency. We are back. Welcome.
And it's been a good season so far. Like the amount of feedback that we get. We are experimenting. And I think we keep on saying that is part of growth. That is part of the Dietitian Frequency growing. And we just delivering week after week, Thursday after Thursday.
I love it for us.
Yeah.
We've got an interesting topping today.
We do. And
a topping. I said topping.
You topic. Said a topping?
I'm thinking of food.
You're thinking about have you had lunch already?
Girl's gotta eat. A girl has gotta eat.
Yeah. So today we're talking about endometriosis.
Yes, we are.
And a big reason for that is that March is endometriosis month. Is it a national, is it a South African thing, or is it an international, that part I didn't get right. Is it more the South Africa, is it more worldwide or international only, or here in South Africa as well?
I think it's global.
It's global.
Yeah, okay. Because when I just looked it up, it came up quite quickly. Mm. So I think it is a global thing.
Okay.
But very interesting, because there's not a lot of information about it, and a lot of people, I think, sometimes confuse it with PCOS.
Yes.
So we'll be going into all of that today. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be a very exciting listen. It's going to be a very exciting listen and very different. And I feel like women's health issues are not spoken about
nearly
as much. They're not researched. It's just, we need so much more effort towards us as women. It's like men said, you can do this.
But you know, the irony is that women are the majority in terms of gender split. And when it comes to nutrition science or just human biology, women are not well, females are not well researched.
That's very true. A lot of research is mostly done on men. Mm. And our hormones are so different.
Mm.
And the way our bodies are function and how our bodies are structured is so different. So really, 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 if there's anyone out there who is young, who is a child and is wondering what to do when they grow up, please go into healthcare and go into research. We need so much more research on women's health.
Mm.
And we'll all be better for it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like simple questions like, is it really a fact or a fad that, you know, the whole period syncing thing, is that real, or is it something that is just coincidental? Like, there's so much research that
still needs to be done. Yeah. And you are taking us through this topic today.
I am. That is very true. No pressure.
I mean, I'm just, you know, excited to learn and just understand. I think the big thing that you are saying now, most people confuse PCOS with endometriosis. What is the difference? Is there a difference? Obviously, we've established there is a difference, but what is the difference? Take us through that.
So with PCOS, they're both women's health conditions, and I can understand where people see the familiarities or similarities, because both of them do cause infertility. Both of them can have associations in terms of, you know, mental health, energy levels can be different, but the main difference would be also just the diagnostic criteria. That's one of them. So with PCOS, you have to either have, you know, it's called, it's that hair, it's hirsutism, where you have a lot of hair growth, abnormal hair growth in different areas. So I always call it the T-zone.
Mm.
So around the forehead, around the almost the, what do you call it? The
Mustache
area. Yeah. Yes, the chin, some hairs on the chest as well. That's how you know, that's one of the first symptoms that you should look out for.
Those are for PCOS. Okay.
Yeah. So PCOS is that unintentional, unwanted hair growth in those areas.
Okay.
And then you also have with PCOS, there are the androgens. So androgens are basically the hormones. So testosterone that's abnormally high.
Mm.
That's something that you can look out for, along with, you know, things like hair loss. That's something that we can also see. It's either hair loss, hair growth, and then infertility. Like I said, that's for both of them.
Yeah.
But where I see the difference mainly between the PCOS and the endometriosis is actually the endometriosis has a lot of pain associated with this.
Uh-huh.
A lot of pain and a kind of digestive system. So gut health comes in a lot with the endometriosis.
The bloating and constipation. And it can swing either way.
Yeah, bloating is one of those for sure, constipation. Generally, gut health is just not
compromised.
Good. It's compromised. Some people find that, you know, especially those who are very aware of their, like, the toilet habits,
like, yeah,
that that's more abnormal in terms of yeah. the smells of the poo. Yeah. I know we do a lot of poop talk as dietitians.
Yes, so yes, yes.
That's something that you can kind of be aware yeah. of.
No, but we can't have enough of a poop talk because
yeah.
it tells us so much about a person's dietary habits. Is the poop soft? Is it smooth? Is it smelly? Is it oily? Yeah. Does it float? Does it...
Exact. Does it have cracks in it?
Exact. Does it have blood in it? It tells us a lot. Whether you are sick in hospital or just out of hospital day to day, we ask all of that information to get an idea of your dietary habits there.
Definitely. And one thing, if I can just add in terms of one thing that's very important in terms of diagnostics, the ultrasound is what is used to diagnose endometriosis or LAP. It's a LAP test that's done. So those are the two things that usually... You know, it's more diagnosed with that visual for the endometriosis, whereas with PCOS, if you have two out of those symptoms at the least, then you can be diagnosed with PCOS. Mm.
Okay. I wanted to say also that then if there is all of that going on, whether it's PCOS or endometriosis, and we are saying it affects one's gut health, so surely also it does affect one's mental health because there is that link between their gut health and mental health. And
definitely,
people who've got endometriosis or PCOS usually be depressed as well and have some form of anxiety going on. One can somewhat say that it's all of those things going on. And that's why this area is important as an area of research. Just to say, you're not crazy. You are not crazy.
Your feelings are valid.
Something is actually going on. You are possibly, you possibly have endometriosis or even PCOS.
Definitely. And I think also like just looking into symptoms, like one of the hardest symptoms that can also affect your mental health is if you're having trouble conceiving.
Mm.
Like if you've been trying and you have no idea why things aren't working for you, you've gone to specialists and you spend so much money and so much time and so much mental strength just trying to conceive and it's not happening.
Yeah,
I think it's really one of those things to try and investigate and see if maybe it is the endometriosis,
because it might just not be that
you
are less of a woman, because that's what they say, you can't conceive because what's wrong with you, you get married, people are already saying you should have a child now, you've been married for 2 years, you've been married for 3 years, only to find that a woman is trying, you know, but they have trouble conceiving because they've got endometriosis.
But I think when it comes to conception, it's one of those where both the woman and the men need to be looked into, because I find like historically it's on us, but men also need to really support their health, the health of themselves, of their own sperm, because that can also really help. So some of the things that I'm going to mention in terms of like the dietary changes that can be done in terms of endometriosis, we always encourage that, you know, you support your partner in that and through that and make the same changes as well, because there will be a lot of benefits for the both of you if you both go on this journey together.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, are there any specific markers that we look out for on the blood tests? Say a person has gone to get their bloods drawn and they are doing, as dietitians and, you know, healthcare professionals, what are we looking for in the blood tests?
So, like, with endometriosis, it's very much associated with inflammation. So, like, the general definition of it is where you have that tissue lining that's similar to your uterus that grows outside of the uterus, and it causes pain and can be associated with the infertility. So, if you've got that, you've got a lot of inflammation, there's certain inflammatory markers that can be looked at through blood results that you can actually ask your doctor to kind of walk you through. So some of them could be your iron levels. It could be what we call ESR or CRP, which is your C-reactive protein. And that's really important in terms of, it's essentially one of the biggest inflammatory markers it that is, we look at. And even looking at your HbA1c, that's hemoglobin A1c. That's one of those markers that we look at that's also associated with diabetes, but is important to kind of explore with endometriosis as well.
Okay.
And then another one is your cholesterol levels, and your vitamin D levels are really important. Really important in homocysteine. But with vitamin D, we find that people who've got kind of a deficiency, that also can negatively affect them in terms of their symptoms as well.
Okay.
Same with zinc as well. So yeah, those are just some of the markers you want to look at. But in terms of, you know, what, how you can kind of know if you've got inflammation with those low vitamin D levels and the blood results, it's just, just making sure that you're always getting that checked on a regular basis.
Mm.
So if you're getting that checked on a regular basis, that will really help you to identify whether or not there are any signs of potential inflammation.
Mm.
And with ferritin, that's also one that you should look at. So if your ferritin is one of those blood markers that if it's elevated, it is also a sign of inflammation.
Ferritin has to do with iron as well, hey?
Yeah, it's associated with your iron levels. So yeah, you really want to look into that as well.
Mm.
But yeah, I think we've gone through all of them, and just making sure specifically with ESR, that's essentially elevated erythrocytes sedimentation rates. Mm. It's a long word for basically when it's elevated, it's one of those non-specific markers of inflammation. So another thing to look into and just know that, okay, when your doctor walks you through these results, you can understand that, okay, this is what it means and this is what I need to do to change or like change my habits. There's a lot of dietary and lifestyle habits that you can change to kind of support reducing the inflammation in the body.
Okay. So basically those bloods tell us a lot. You know, they give us a lot of information. And to also I use to confirm endometriosis, to say, okay, if this and this and this and this checks out, then definitely you've got endometriosis.
Not necessarily the bloods. The bloods will tell you if there's a lot of inflammation.
Okay.
But it's more the ultrasound and the lab that will tell you if you've got that confirmed diagnosis. And then at least with the bloods, it helps to know where your inflammation is at so that you can manage it and try and help to kind of bring it down through diet and through whatever specific guidelines you get from your health professionals.
Okay. Yeah. Now let's reel it back to nutrition, right?
Because that's what we know. that is where we know our stuff.
What nutrients are important here? You've mentioned vitamin D, that also if it's low and all of that, but what other vitamins and minerals are important here? What nutrients are important?
So I always say your B vitamins.
Yeah.
B vitamins are really important. One of them being B6, because it's actually needed for the production of something that we call the corpus luteum.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually helps us. That's one of the glands that are associated with progesterone. And progesterone is an important hormone that's released, and that's after ovulation, that it's usually released more. So with the B6, you just want to make sure that you're supporting that kind of normal cycle and the cycle where you want that extra progesterone to be released. So there's a lot of different foods that are rich in B6 that can actually help in terms of that. So things like your chickpeas or your beef liver or things like potatoes and bananas or beef liver if you like your organ meats or pumpkin. Those are just some that are quite a nice kind of source. Or even pumpkin seeds.
Mm.
Both of them actually are a great source.
You know what we call pumpkin seeds in Zulu?
What?
Izimbek.
Izimbek. I like that word.
Because a pumpkin is ibek.
Yeah.
So izimbek, it's the pumpkin seeds.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, I haven't said this word in years.
I haven't heard that word in years. So
it feels good to say it again. Yes, I still remember. Pumpkin seeds is izimbek.
So yeah, get those in. Make sure it's so easy to get them in. I mean, you could even, if you're someone who is into, you know, planting your own garden, that's another nice thing.
Yeah, and pumpkin grows very easy.
It does, and it doesn't need you to be as hands-on as some others.
It does take over the garden, though.
Yeah, it does. It takes a lot of space. So if space is a concern, then maybe not.
It's like sweet potato. Sweet potato, once it starts growing, it's just going to take over the whole garden.
It'll take over the whole garden. That's so true. But yeah, another one I would say for sure is your what we call them are phytoestrogens.
Yeah.
So basically it takes the place of estrogen receptors. So it takes it out. And especially with what I find, people who have endometriosis are very much estrogen dominant. So they have a lot more estrogen. So those phytoestrogens help to kind of bring those estrogen levels down so that it's a little bit more within range and kind of normally balanced. So food sources that you would really want to focus on for phytoestrogens is things like your flax seeds or your pistachio nuts,
mm.
or even your raspberries is a nice one.
Mm.
Edamame beans are kind of like a new fun one. Those are quite cool. You can
and
do those.
And they're quite high in protein as well, and fiber, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're a great source of fiber.
And they can be, you know, they're easy as a snack and
yeah.
a starter if you're out at a what restaurant. Cuisines normally? Which cuisine?
Asian style.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Asian style cuisines. They always have edamame beans as starter.
Even on those like those bowls, those like
that,
you know, those health bowls. Yeah, there, there's like there's the edamame beans, and then there's a little bit of
you did extra one veg bowl recently. I saw it on your story. Was there edamame beans or was it chickpeas?
There wasn't. There was probably, there was chickpeas.
Okay.
You know I'm a chickpea girl.
Yeah, yeah. Are you growing them at home? I wanted to ask.
Yes.
No way.
They're so good. But like, there's not a lot.
But they're there.
But they're there.
What?
I've actually, yeah, I think it was last year that we had some.
Yeah?
There was a quite a decent amount of chickpeas. It was really nice.
That's wild. But that's in a good way.
I know. It's like, that house.
You know, a flex,
that household.
A flex to say, well, we just have chickpeas in the backyard.
Yeah, like, just like that.
Beans, yeah, I know beans, but chickpeas. And I was like, okay.
Mm, yeah, chickpeas in the backyard.
Wow.
Very cool. I take no credit for that. But
no, we know that. We know that. That your mom is the one taking
and that's
care.
That's actually my dad. He's the one who's on top of the beans right now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Your dad is vegan or vegetarian or now back into meat eating as well?
He has a bit of fish here and there.
Oh, more pescatarian.
But yeah, he's more pescatarian right now, but very much more plant-based.
I know. They know that they know their thing.
They know their stuff.
They know their stuff.
But yeah, there's so many like different nutrients that you can focus on. For example, you want to get in some of your mushrooms.
Yeah.
Your button mushrooms actually help with they help again with the androgens, what we call.
Mm.
So a lot of the time, the androgens are converted into more estrogen.
Yeah.
So when we have something like that, there are foods that come in the form of kind of inhibitors to actually block that conversion into more estrogen in the body.
Mm.
So yeah, things like your button mushrooms, your olive oil, your celery, those all act as what we call a aromatase inhibitor. So
okay,
very very interesting.
So true. Back to the point of mushrooms.
Yeah.
You can actually put mushrooms and let them stand in the sun in direct sunlight.
Yes.
For at least 15 to 20 minutes. In that way, they actually absorb vitamin D, and so their vitamin D content increases by the time you cook them. So
exactly.
It's a quick tip that next time you've got mushrooms, and you want to cook them, just put them,
in the sun.
And let them absorb vitamin D.
You've got two benefits now. You've
exactly.
got extra vitamin D. You're meeting a third of your vitamin D requirements
yes.
by doing that, by just having one portion.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're also helping manage your estrogen levels.
So I want to high five you right now. Because
I would high five you right now. Yeah, it's so good. Honestly,
yeah.
There's so many benefits.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, just anything that's going to facilitate the removal of that extra estrogen will really help to just support some healthy progesterone levels, because the main thing about hormones is getting them balanced correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's something I always say is very important.
Okay, now we have spoken about the nutrients important for endometriosis and how to get those balanced, as we were mentioning. And I know that the beginning of this conversation also we mentioned periods, that some one of the symptoms would be irregular periods, whether it's PCOS or endometriosis. That's a beginning. That's a start that something is wrong, with your hormones. That's a signal. I do want us to talk about what to eat at different, times of your menstrual cycle, because we do know that it makes a difference. But I think let's put that aside and go into the dietary management of endometriosis first.
Yeah.
And then we'll come to the period syncing, as they call it, to the how can you align what you eat to get the nutrients and optimize your nourishment at the time, at the different phases of your menstrual cycle. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's go to the dietary management of endometriosis. What can I do? Now you've told me this is a diagnosis. Now I know I've got endometriosis. I've done the ultrasound. It has been confirmed. I know the nutrients I need. What can I do?
I always say, you know, one of the diets that has the most research is the Mediterranean style diet.
Yeah.
So across the board for different chronic conditions, also for endometriosis, we find that it's actually very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's associated with so many anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. So because of that, that's so one of those things that really, really, really helps. First of all, it helps with protecting your eggs from inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
It helps with preserving the functioning of your ovaries.
Yeah.
And then it also helps to provide extra nutrients to support your health and to support a healthy pregnancy for any partners who are trying to conceive. So there's so many of those benefits specifically associated when it comes to endometriosis. So if we're looking at, you know, the types of foods that help with managing that inflammation, a lot of the time it's a lot of the foods that we know we should be eating, but we struggle, you know, life gets hectic, we forget, we don't prioritize them. But just, you know, taking it back to basics, getting in your fruits and vegetables.
Mm.
You want to get your seasonal fruit and vegetables. They're higher in nutrients. Get them locally produced. They're better for the environment when they are seasonal as well. And you're supporting the economy of your area and of the locals in your area as well. Another thing I would definitely say is making sure you're getting in your whole grains.
Mm.
Whole grains are so important. They're also important for the gut health, because remember, with endometriosis, we've got the gut health side of it that is also associated.
Mm.
So getting the whole grains in is so important. So variety, especially.
Mm.
So anything like your oats, your breads, your specifically your whole grain breads and your seeded breads are great options that you can go for. Swapping out your refined starches for your complex starches or your whole grain starches. Something simple like having your sorghum porridge as an alternative, because it's got a lot more fiber per 100 gram, usually like about 11 grams I've seen in some products per 100 gram. So yeah, looking at high fiber products and incorporating those into your diet, and that really goes a long way. And then another thing is, you know, your protein, getting a variety. I know we love our meat, South Africans. I know we love our meat.
Big meat eaters.
We are such big meat eaters. But you can still get that variety, even if it means, you know, adding in a half a cup of your lentils into your mince, so that you've got a bit of beans in there. You've got a bit more of a leaner protein that you're adding in. Just trying to add in beans regularly into your diet is so important. And I mean, in South Africa, at least we've also got beans as a staple of one of our starches.
Yeah.
Umngqusho, sampan beans. That's perfect. Having but that no, as a staple as well.
We don't want to eat that because that's like too old-fashioned, isn't it?
No.
Go back to our traditional foods episode, please.
Yeah, if you're hearing this, go back to the traditional foods episode for sure, because there's so much health benefits from the foods that we eat. And I can tell you now, if any celebrity went into, you know, analyzing the health benefits of the different foods, or if any scientist looked into it, I'm sure some of them would even be touted and like advertised as quote unquote a superfood.
Yep.
So really, really don't sleep on your traditional foods, and also your vegetable oil, specifically your olive oil. That's something that's very much predominantly used in a Mediterranean style diet. But getting your nuts and seeds, your healthy fats, things for like, for instance, from your fish, you really need to be getting at least 3 portions of oily fish a week. And it doesn't have to be outside of your budget. Like, it can be having tuna, it can be having sardines, it can be having your pilchards. There's so many different ways that you can get in enough of your oily fish in the week, and it doesn't have to be breaking the bank. Of course, salmon and trout are also other examples of your oily fish, but they're not the only examples.
No, they're not the only. They are the most expensive, but they're not the only ones.
Exactly, exactly. They definitely are. But yeah, I think with the Mediterranean style diet, definitely also, we also need to think of, you know, we love to socialize, and a lot of the time as adults, alcohol is involved socially. And consuming alcohol in moderation is really, really, really important because of the inflammation that is associated with too much alcohol intake. And again, remember, endometriosis is an inflammatory disease or condition. So you really want to have it in smaller amounts. Wine is one of those alcohols that's got some, it's got the tannins in it, right?
And polyphenols.
And polyphenols. Those are like potent plant nutrients that are very important for your health. And they have those health benefits in terms of antioxidants and anti-inflammatories. But
But I now, mean, don't drink a much. Whole bottle of wine looking for those. You rather, you know, include more vegetables and fruits. And if you are drinking, you still have to drink responsibly. But we're just saying that there is, you know, that benefity, you know, with inverted commas, when it comes to wine, those antioxidants.
Yeah. But I would say focus more on the food than the wine.
Yeah.
And easier said than done for some, but really, really, if you can, that would be ideal. And also lifestyle, because a lot of the time, you know, when we think Mediterranean style diet, it's not only, you know, supporting the local vendors, but also sitting together and eating together as a household or as a family or, you know, going outside, moving your body with people that you love, moving your body with yourself to, you know, take care of yourself. So that's very important as well when it comes to your health. So those cornerstones of kind of nutrition are also very important. And I think one of the nutrients that I have seen can sometimes be people can be deficient in when they've got endometriosis is zinc. So also making sure you're getting a good amount of zinc in your diet, and that you can get very easily, you know, your meat sources, your organ meats are a source of zinc. Your whole grains are also a source of zinc. Your leafy greens, your nuts, your nuts and seeds can be a source of zinc. So there's lots of different ways that you can actually add that into your diet.
Okay. So we've spoken about diets, being active. One thing I heard from a grapevine is that poor sleep shrinks
I'm trying to think of the word now.
No, men's thing.
Testicles.
Testicles. So poor sleep reduces the size of testicles.
I did not know that.
So
learn something new every day.
I heard this from a sleep specialist doctor. I'm not gonna I don't know if she wants to be mentioned, so I'm not going to mention him. But then we were at an event, and part of her research is looking into the impact of that poor sleep has on our health in its different areas, but also looking into hormonal balance and fertility and all of that. So is sleep also an important factor to consider, getting good sleep, good quality sleep for endometriosis?
100%.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to your hormones, your body needs that time where kind of everything gets to shut off. Because when you go to sleep, your brain gets to almost clean itself. You know, you've got the lymphatic system, and that helps to kind of wash it down. And we really need that time where our body can kind of give itself a nice shower.
Yeah.
And that's the time that a lot of the time we really neglect sleep. And that's so important, especially for inflammatory conditions, because when you don't get enough sleep, that also increases the inflammation, and that worsens the mental health symptoms that are associated. So the anxiety, the depression is also worsened. It really is so important to get in enough sleep. So that's also one of those where I would definitely agree. Getting in enough sleep will really help you as well. It's one of those that I would say is a non-negotiable. Sleep. Getting enough rest, not only sleep, but getting enough rest.
Yeah. Because they say that sleep is not just the thing we do at the end of the day. Yeah. You have to be rested. You need to be well rested. Back into the food a bit. I'm also now thinking about, what about endocrine disruptors?
Yes.
You know, let's talk about those. Like, how do they affect or impact on endometriosis?
So with your endocrine disruptors, they're actually essentially hormone disruptors. So we find them in different products. We find them, essentially what they do is they increase your risk of different diseases or conditions.
Yeah.
And a lot of them actually can be found in very common things that are around the house, very common things we put in and on our bodies on a daily basis. For instance, some of the endocrine disruptors we find are in fragrance. Anything that's got a fragrance, like for instance, if you've got a deodorant that's got a fragrance in there, or in your sulfates, your parabens that you find in your shampoos, and it's called phthalates. I always struggle to pronounce this word, but your phthalates are also another thing that you can sometimes find in those products. So finding shampoos and conditioners that are free of that is also important, because when you're putting that on your body, remember your skin is also an organ. So it's one of those things that can really affect you, and can be also sometimes it's associated with increasing a risk of endometriosis. So trying to swap to fragrance-free or trying to swap to the paraben-free kind of shampoos.
Sulfite-free.
And also like something as simple as a Skaftin. If it's a plastic one, it's got BPAs in it. BPAs are also endocrine disruptors.
Mm.
So going for the glass ones or BPA-free ones is very important. And then like it's some things are out of our control. So for instance, it can be in certain cleaning products or it can be kind of in the air. If there's like a massive fire that happens, we can have that release of like things like our ultrazines or specifically dioxins we can also find. So like air pollution is one of those where you really can't control how much of it is out there. So those endocrine disruptors... There's nothing you can do, but trying to work with what you can control, I think is essentially very, very important.
Sure.
Even something as simple as swapping from like a nonstick pan to a cast iron pan, because those again, the endocrine disruptors are also found in that nonstick pan, and some of them start to flake, and that flakes and goes into our food. So now we're consuming those endocrine disruptors.
Mm.
So yeah, cast iron. Is also important.
Sure.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of info.
But I think it's important. I mean, if you're trying to figure out how to, and especially if you've been diagnosed, or even if you think you are more high at risk of having endometriosis, these things become even much more important. They're important for all of us, but I think they become even much more important. But another layer is that it teaches us that we can't just get information off the internet to fix us. If you've got endometriosis, you can't just go to the internet and say, what can I eat to deal with endometriosis? Because you see now there's a whole lot of things that are part of the big picture. There is the diet itself, there is lifestyle, there is things like sulfite-free, and there is that, and, you know, switching. I don't think you can just easily get this information that you need to switch from this type of a pen to this type of a pot, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think it makes these conversations even much more important.
Yeah, and I think as dietitians, we always recommend, you know, as much as Dr. Google, we always talk about Dr. Google. Yeah. We're always dragging Dr. Google, but what I appreciate about Dr. Google is it does help us open our minds.
Yeah.
And it does help maybe validate some symptoms that you might have been feeling. But do not let Dr. Google diagnose you.
Yeah.
Go to a doctor, go to a health professional. Yeah. Make sure you're getting all the help you need from someone who is qualified, who can actually give you a proper diagnosis.
Okay. Takeaway message?
Takeaway message, I would say, honestly, make sure you see a dietitian.
Mm.
And make sure that you're nourishing your body. Don't forget about gut health. I know we didn't focus a lot on it, but really getting those whole grains in, getting in your probiotics. If that means that you go for a supplement, making sure you've got a supplement that's got lots of different strains in it, bacterial strains in it. You're going for a supplement that maybe even is kept in the fridge because you know then that bacteria is active.
Mm.
And then not forgetting to get in your healthy fats. Anything that's high in antioxidants and anti-inflammatory properties is very, very important. So your nuts and seeds, your oily fish three times a week, your olive oils, using that as well. Getting your fruits and vegetables is also very important.
Mm.
Getting that regularly and making sure that you're trying to minimize any kind of stress, sleeping, resting enough, and making sure that you're trying to stay active as well. And again, always going for locally produced and seasonal foods so that you're getting the most out of the nutrients, but also out of the flavor.
And price.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We can't forget about the price. That's the most important part.
Yeah, more affordable. But yeah, I myself, as I said at the beginning, I was excited about this conversation. There's a lot that I learned from this conversation. And thank you so much for unpacking it for us and just, you know, the science there. I was like, okay, bring it.
And I think the next time this is going to definitely need a part two, because if I think of the different nutrients that are needed at different times of your cycle, there's so much information on that. So I think if you guys would like us to do a second episode on this, even if it's not Endometriosis Awareness Month, then
We'll do that.
We will do it.
I think definitely we have to do period syncing. Exactly what you're saying. We have to.
For sure.
You know, I know a lot of people say, oh, I struggle with it. Oh, I struggle with it. We'll do it.
We will do it.
All right. Bye.
Bye, everyone.